Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. My honored guest tonight is Robert Salas. And Robert Salas is a highly regarded witness to the 1967 UFO encounters at Malmstrom AFP. He has been a researcher and speaker on the UFO phenomenon at nuclear weapons bases since 1994. He is also the co-author of the book Faded Giant with James Klotz and published in 2005, which deals specifically with the 1967 missile UFO incidents at Malmstrom AFB. Robert Salas graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy and spent 7 years on active duty from 1964 until 1971. He also held positions at Martin Marietta, Rockwell International, and spent 21 years at the FAA as an aircraft structures certification engineer. While an officer in the Air Force, he held positions as weapons controller, drone pilot, missile launch officer, as well as an engineer on the Titan III missile program. He will present revealing evidence of historical UFO incidents at Malmstrom AFB. On the mornings of March 16, 1967 and March 24, 1967, 10 nuclear missiles had become simultaneously non-operational at two different launch facilities immediately after guards reported UFOs hovering above the facilities. My friend Robert Salas, I want to welcome you to the show ET First Contact Radio.
Thank you, Martin. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
It's a great pleasure and a great honor. And I think that even though those incidents happened 40 years ago, I think the evidence is so clear from what you experienced that the listeners will be overwhelmed with the and be impressed by the things that you can tell. So maybe you can speak about the morning of 1964, or 1967, I mean, when those 10 missiles had become simultaneously inoperational.
Well, of course, Martin, in March of 67, I made the same mistake you did. March of 67, actually March 24th, I was a missile launch officer stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base, Montana. I was assigned to what we call a launch control facility, where the missiles are controlled from this facility. The missiles are located about a mile or two away from this position. This location is near a little town called Roy, Montana, which is in about the middle of the state of Montana. There was just two of us down in an underground capsule about 60 feet underground. I remember receiving two phone calls. First phone call in sometime in the evening. The main guard upstairs said that he and the other guards have been watching strange lights in the sky. They've been moving at very fantastic speeds and then stopping on a dime and then reversing course, making 90-degree turns, things like that. Very unusual. He was certain they were not aircraft and wanted to report it. Well, this was a little shock to me because, of course, I wasn't really interested in UFOs at the time. I even said, "You mean like UFOs?" And he said, well, he couldn't explain their maneuvers, so he just wanted to report it, and I kind of dismissed it. I guess I was a little cavalier about it, but because normally they are very professional in their reporting. Anyway, I hung up the phone, and a few minutes later he calls back, and this time he's screaming into the phone, very, very agitated, very frightened. And he says all the guards are out there with their weapons, and they're all looking at this glowing red object hovering above the front gate. It's just sitting there, pulsating a red light. He had a hard time describing what it looked like, other than it was oval-shaped, and it was a very bright reddish-orange light. Then he said one of the guards got injured and he had to hang up, so we hung up the phone. Well, first he asked me what he should do, and I simply told him that to ensure nothing comes inside the fenced area, use whatever means necessary. I was in shock. He was in shock. He hung up. Had the status of these missiles and wondered whether or not something was going to shut those missiles down. I remember specifically doing that before I went over and I woke up my commander, Fred Maywald, told him about the phone calls, and just as I was about to tell him, the missiles indeed did shut down. All 10 nuclear missiles under our control shut down while this object was overhead. He has since verified this in a phone call and in writing, and it's You can actually listen to the audio tape the first time I contacted him on my website. It's spiralgalaxy.org.
Right. And if you speak about this time of the development of technology on Earth in 1967, I think, because I'm good at electronics, you know, I know a bit about electronics, and I think that in 1967, no force on Earth would be able to shut down 10 nuclear missiles simultaneously. Do you agree on that?
Absolutely. Not only do I agree, but the Air Force agreed. They did one of the documents we received stated that it was highly improbable that this could happen because the indications on the missiles, we have a way of checking the reasons for the shutdowns. The indications were guidance and control system failure. We have a coupler, a logic coupler, something like a computer. That validates that the missiles are properly oriented for their targets that they were launched. So each of these couplers would have had to separately become disabled within a second or two of each other. And that sort of a failure mode is, you can imagine, very highly, highly improbable, to use a mathematical term.
Yes, and also I think those interfaces that lock the control of the missile, they are shielded electromagnetically, so you cannot interfere with EMPs or whatever.
That's correct. Yeah.
So whatever they did, it had to be very advanced technology.
Very advanced. I certainly didn't know of anything that could have sent specific signals through 60 feet of earth and concrete, and then penetrate these triply shielded cabling systems that we had, cables going to each of the sites, and inject a specific signal, a very specific signal to each of the missiles. We don't have anything that could do something like that. If we did, we could eliminate the possibility of nuclear war everywhere.
Yeah, anyway, I think back in the 60s, the United States were the most advanced in radiation technology and electromagnetics. So probably the Russians wouldn't be able to develop such technology, not in that decade.
Certainly not. Certainly not. In fact, our systems where we were located in the capsule were, had to be air cooled. So we had, these old radio tubes. We didn't have microchips and that sort of thing at that time.
No, it was more analog technology with transistors and coils.
That's right.
Yeah. So how did you or colleagues react to the incident back in that time? What happened in the days after?
We were relieved that morning. And by the way, I didn't mention the Echo flight. That occurred on March 16th, which was about 8 days earlier. And that was reported to us when we reported to the command post that something similar had happened a week earlier. But when we were relieved that morning, we were ordered to go back immediately to the base. Matter of fact, they sent a helicopter out to pick us up. And when we got back to the base, word had gotten out with some of my colleagues, and they were asking all kinds of questions about this. Well, all we could do was shake our heads because we didn't know what was going on. We had no idea what had happened. All we could do is report what was reported to us. We immediately had to go in and see our commander, our squadron commander, and he was white as a sheet. He assured me it was not an Air Force exercise of any sort. And Matter of fact, they had a member of AFOS, Air Force Office of Special Investigation, in the office. He wanted us to sign a document of non-disclosure, which we both did. We signed a document stating we would never speak of this, and that was that. It was classified incident, highly classified, and we were not to speak to anyone about it. Not our spouses, not our colleagues in the Air Force, nobody. So it was hushed up. There's a good reason.
Did your superiors threaten you not to disclose anything?
Well, the threat was already in writing. If we did disclose something, we would be subject to prosecution and many, many years at hard labor at a federal penitentiary.
Really?
Really.
Yeah. That's quite difficult to hear, I think. If you are a young man and you are working in this facility,
I didn't understand why we had to sign anything, because we were already cleared for highly classified material, obviously. We were working in a highly classified area. I kind of objected at first because, we were already cleared for top secret and above. But he insisted that we sign this particular document stating that in this particular case, we were never to speak of this or we would suffer severe penalties.
Right. Robert, I want to ask you something else. I have read a document, a book. It's called The Secret Case of UFOs, and it's by a German author. But the thing is, what is interesting, back in the book is a list of organizations in the United States that are dealing with UFOs. You have the FBI, you have the CIA, you have the NSA, you have NORAD, you have NASA, but there was a list of 20 other organizations, I think something with NBA and... I even don't know what those abbreviations mean, but they're above top secret organizations that since the 1950s, after the Roswell incident, came into place, and that the public doesn't know about. What do you know about those organizations?
There are so many secretive organizations within our government, it's hard to keep track of all of them. But certainly people do know about the ones you mentioned, but there are many, many others. There's a good book right now that I've got. I haven't been able to delve into too much, but it does list in great detail many of the other secretive organizations within our government. So if you send me an initial or a name, I'll try to look it up for you, and I can try to respond. But
okay, I will do that. And yeah. Because I don't have the book here, it's difficult to ask specific questions. But it might be interesting to uncover what they do.
Hello? And are you still on?
And then there's something else. That might be of interest for you to reveal to the listeners. In 2010, there were 40 missiles that were becoming inoperative, also simultaneously. Yes?
Actually, it was 50.
50? Okay.
This was at Francis E. Warren Air Force Base. In 2010, this was, I think, in October of 2010, the Air Force lost 50 missile systems. These would be Minuteman IIIs. I'm trying to get the information here, but Minuteman IIIs were lost, and the Air Force claimed this was a computer glitch.
Right.
That's kind of hard to believe that the Air Force would not have analyzed any failure mode of a computer that would create such havoc. I know in 1967 we had very reliable systems. I was on duty for 3 years as a missile launch officer and never had more than one missile down for any reason. So, but however, we have received information that from airmen that were on base that there were UFOs seen nearby when this occurred. So we're trying to get those. Those people are still in the Air Force, so they're under what's called the Personnel Reliability Program, which requires them to not talk about UFOs, especially to the public. So we cannot really get their testimony at this point, but I think sometime in the future we'll be able to.
Yeah, that will be very interesting, because those intelligences that are operating these UFOs, do you think they intend to prevent a third world war on our planet?
Yeah, I've been asked that many times. That is purely speculative as to whether or not they would prevent. They clearly have the capability of disabling our missiles, and probably could disable all missiles if they had a mind to. Now, the question is, would they, or let me just say that there are many abduction witnesses that have stated that the extraterrestrials have a kind of a hands-off policy as far as interfering with our social progress or our progress as we evolve.
Yeah, something like a prime directive.
Yeah, something like that, right. And so taking that into account, it's questionable, but the point is, it is clear, it should be clear to everybody that nuclear weapons are not weapons of war, but weapons of mass destruction. They simply destroy things massively. Anything living, it's just total destruction. It is not a war weapon. You can't win a war with it. Nobody wins a war if we start shooting nuclear weapons at each other. So obviously we need to continue to make efforts to remove all these weapons from our midst.
Yes, indeed. I have seen some interesting videos on RT News. It's a news channel it's called Russian Television, and they sometimes have compelling evidence of UFOs that are witnessed by people. And in Kazakhstan, there was a spiral in the sky. It appeared to be a missile or a rocket, and then it turned into a spiral and disappeared into a kind of energy vortex. Have you heard about that incident?
Yes, I have. I saw the photographs, but of course I know nothing than anyone else, any more than anyone else on that.
Right. I'm curious what the authorities, how do they would react if their very expensive war material is neutralized like that in a matter of minutes. I mean, I don't think they're very...
I'm sure that this is a worldwide phenomenon, and militaries all over the world are cooperating on exchanging information and trying to design weaponry against these UFOs. I'm sure that's going on, and I think that's one of the reasons this has not been disclosed, and that is militaries all over the world consider these things as the enemy, and that's what concerns me. Not that they're whether they're the enemy or not. It's that the public has not been involved in these decisions and
yes,
discussions.
Yes, because this is highly classified when when you speak about the military technology, at today's day is dealing with technologies from Nikola Tesla, like HARP, which is abbreviation for High Oral Active Research Project in Alaska. And there are IceCut in I think in Sweden. There are all over the globe those antennas that can disrupt our weather and modify and even create earthquakes. And I personally believe that those antennas are designed to create certain frequencies to keep UFOs out, and they additionally they're using chemtrails for it. What's your point of view on this?
Yeah, that certainly. What I know about HARP is that they are using low frequency signals to affect the ionosphere in some way, and to improve communications. But anytime we have a government agency performing a secret operation that affects our environment, you know, this is, we're talking about the Earth environment, and the Earth is not just about military. It's about all of us.
Indeed. And,
we could be very much affected if they foul up the ionosphere. That's what is very disturbing about this.
And what I believe and hope is that those good ETs, those benevolent ETs, will help us to somehow free us from this military control.
Well, again, this is something we have to work on. Humanity has to work on. We are seeing people all over the world now, not in the United States, but other places that are rising up against autocratic power.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have to be concerned about that. Even the so-called democratic countries like the United States, we still have to be concerned about the extreme secrecy that's going on in our government, the absolute controls that they're trying to have over us. We have to be alert and aware about those sorts of things and fight back. We have to talk about this. We have to speak about this. We have to open up our governments. And so that's part of, in fact, that is part of this whole phenomenon, this UFO phenomenon. I integrate extreme secrecy by governments as an integral part of that.
Yes, indeed. And I think that the secrecy about UFOs and ETs, because it's obvious that there have been contacts. I have interviewed a guy called Robert Potter, and he said that President Kennedy and Eisenhower were contacted by Commander Valiant Thor directly, and he was from another planet, and he looked human, and they tried to put needles in his arm, but the needles would break because he was kind of further evolved than Earth humans, and he wouldn't be affected by it, and he could walk through a steel door without being harmed, because they tried to imprison him. But what's happening right now, because there are many more people that are asking for disclosure from our government, there has something to happen, you know, and there are also organizations like Anonymous who are trying to, and even succeeding in getting information from the service from NASA, and I have heard, I learned that they have now a huge amount of data, terabytes of information from pictures from NASA, that they copied from the server, and once they put that public, I think this will create an enormous effect on society.
Yes, I hope so. I hope that happens. I'm all for groups like WikiLeaks, for example, that has tried to release information that has been classified by governments. So we need more efforts like that, I think.
Yes, I did. I agree. And about WikiLeaks, Julian Assange is now detained, or not yet detained. I mean, he's, I don't know where he is because there's a news blackout. He was supposed to go to Ecuador. But he said that when anything happens to him, you know, when he is assassinated, then all the information that he has collected will go public. But then there's a problem, because about 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, when cables were released from WikiLeaks, they were published in the Washington Post, in all the Dutch newspapers, in the worldwide media. But since a year or so, I don't hear anything about WikiLeaks. It's very silent.
Yes. Well, that probably has to do with the legal battle he's fighting. Maybe he's trying to negotiate things. Nevertheless, he's been a very courageous man. I admire what he's done. And like I said, somehow we've got to we've got to fight the excessive secrecy in governments and the excessive power also that certain groups seem to have.
Yeah, because what's the point of keeping everything secret for the public? I mean, we are evolved enough to hear the truth about the existence of extraterrestrials. And the reason they always give is, oh, there will be massive panic. But I don't think so. I think people will be curious about where are they from and how that will look like. And probably they want to meet them.
Well, we have to deal with them. I don't know how you feel about abductions, but that is very real phenomenon, the abduction phenomenon. People are being taken, and they're being, there's operations being done on them. They're inserted with implants and things like that. They're producing hybrid children. I believe all those things are happening, and maybe indeed with cooperation with our governments. Who knows?
It's called the Greys who did those abductions. They probably heard about this type of race. But what I understood from people that are channeling with it's called the Galactic Federation. They are saying that those Greys are now being stopped to enter our solar system, and that only benevolent, loving ETs are able to enter even this region of the galaxy. I hope that is true, because I cannot prove that, but my gut feeling is saying that those good ETs are now trying to make contact with us.
I hope that's true also. There are some indications that things are happening, more information is being released, and that possibly we will have contact within the next, 10 years or so. I hope that is true.
Yes. Then I want to ask you a question about the past again, about your career. The Titan III missile program, you were there an engineer.
Yes.
Did anything special happen there?
No, not that I know of. I was mostly worked out of an office. I worked with, I think it was Aerojet General at the time. They had the propulsion system on the Titan III, and I would go out and watch the missile launches for the test flights for the Titan III. It was used as a vehicle to put up satellites for the Air Force. So these were military satellites. I didn't have a UFO experience at that time.
Right. Okay. Are there other incidents except 1964 and 1971? And 1967, I mean. Other incidents that happened during your career that you know of that you want to share that were special?
Well, I can't share at this time, but I am writing a book, and I hope to share a very personal incident that occurred involving extraterrestrials. But I'd rather not get into that at this time. I can share that there were times when I thought the Air Force was trying to what we call read me into the secret of UFOs, so that I would not be able to, you know, I would not talk about my case two or three times when I felt that was happening. I can tell you one time when I was stationed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 1969, I had been sent there to finish up my master's degree in engineering, and I wasn't there very long before one of my old classmates from the Air Force Academy contacted me and said that they had a job for me to do, and I said, well, I'm not looking for a job. I was trying to finish my master's degree, and they said he would contact me, and then a little later, I was called by the base psychiatrist's office and told to report to the base psychiatrist. I didn't know why, but I reported anyway, and it came time for the psychiatrist to come and see me to go into his office, I told him I would not go into the office unless I was told why I was there, because I hadn't complained about anything. Anyway, they finally told me I could leave. I never saw the base psychiatrist, but I think if I had, they probably would have got me to admit my UFO experience and had that on my record. So there have been three times, I think, when the Air Force did try to pressure me into not speaking about this.
Okay, that's interesting to know.
Yeah.
Was that stressful for you in any way, for any reason, when you were called to report to the psychiatrist?
Yes, it was very stressful, because I had no reason to complain about any psychiatric problems, and I was still a career Air Force officer at the time, and if I had gone in and stated about my UFO incident for some reason, they would have had that on my record and been able to control me, claiming that I was unstable, etc. But anyway, I'm happy I was able to avoid that.
Because that's their weapon, because when anybody like myself, when you say, okay, I have seen a UFO, I have met people from whatever, the Pleiades or Orion, and then they say, okay, let's put you on medication, and
that's right.
We think you're crazy.
That's right.
And that's their weapon.
That's their weapon. That's one of the main weapons, is to keep this subject as something of ridicule, as something to laugh up about. But like you say, I think that time has passed. I think more and more witnesses are coming forward. We've just had a couple of new witnesses here. You probably heard about ex-CIA officer coming forward, and then just recently, I think.
Yes, I picked that. That's good news.
Yeah, and then it was in the last day, another ex-Air Force colonel pilot came forward and talked about his UFO experience. So, hopefully this ridicule stuff is not going to be working anymore, and more people will feel free to come forward.
Yeah, that will be happy news. I mean, I think, I don't want to go into negativity too much, but we are right now talking on BBS Radio. My program is called ET, First Contact Radio. How much more clear can I be? I speak about ETs and UFOs. Okay, that's my subject. That's how my program is called. But out there in the mainstream media, like BBC World and Fox News and CNN and all the Western media, how often do they talk about UFOs? And then And there's always some skeptical guy who's saying, okay, they're weather balloons or something, you know? So there are forces behind our media organizations who do not want the public to know about the existence of ETs. Why?
Well,
have you any idea why?
Why there are forces within the media that want disclosure? Is that your question?
No, the question is why do they ridicule subjects and why do they not disclose?
Oh, well, one reason they follow the ridicule pattern is because all these news agencies need to have access to government officials in order to announce the news, right?
Right.
And if they start talking about UFOs, the government will laugh at them, and they will not be deemed credible. They're concerned about their image, just as we are. We're concerned about our personal image, holding on to our jobs. You know, that's a very strong way of keeping people in control. If they're concerned about keeping their jobs. So their appearance, their public appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So this ridicule thing is a very strong weapon, and the intelligence agencies know this. Sometimes they put out disinformation out there to make this whole subject seem even more ridiculous to the public. So that's their purpose, but. If we focus on the good cases, the cases where there are supporting witnesses, supporting documents, history of similar cases, if we focus on those, then I think the media must come around eventually and start taking this more seriously.
Yeah, and then speak about empirical evidence with photographs and documents.
Yeah.
Spoken about those documents, about this UFO book. It's called The Secret UFO Book. There are documents that were released by the Freedom of Information Act, but they're completely blanked out. You know, they make very bad quality copies, or they censor all the names, and then there's only one or two words that are visible in the whole document. So what do you do with the document? It's censored.
Right. No, that's practically useless, something like that. I think I do have some good documents in my book. By the way, my book is called Fated Giant. It's available on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. You can also go to my website, spiralgalaxy.org, where I have my evidence posted there. In 2010, we can talk about that. We had a press conference in Washington, D.C. with six other ex-Air Force witnesses.
Yeah, I remember that. I watched it live.
Yeah, so there were seven of us, and we've all written affidavits stating the facts involving UFOs, so... We're putting our honor, our word on the line, and we're going to make a point of pushing this. We have recently, or I have, along with one other fellow, contacted a U.S. congressman. Actually, Peter King is the congressman. He's head of New York. He's head of the Homeland Security Committee for the U.S. Congress. And we have sent him these documents. We've sent him other documents and asked that he look into this, because this is was a national security issue. It's ongoing. And so we're going to keep pressing it. We're serious about not going away. You know, we've made our statements, and we're going to keep pushing.
Yes, and I must say, Robert, that I think you are very courageous. At your age, that you went to this National Press Club meeting in 2010, and that you're still willing to do interviews, and you're writing a book now, and I think that should be known and considered to be very courageous, because it's also my mission to bring the truth out. And I, people can do their story with me if they have a career and have encountered objects or UFOs like yourself. So I want to get the news out for the bigger public. And that's why I do this program on BBS Radio.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you for those kind words. But like you, I'm committed to the truth here. And I thank you for having your program and talking about this subject again.
Yes.
It's important. Yes.
Yes, it's important, and it's also my pleasure. Because I saw this press conference in 2010. I think I saw it afterwards on YouTube. And I saw your speech, and you impressed me, and I thought, okay, let's see what further information I can get from Mr. Salas and bring it into the open, because it's interesting.
Very good. Well,
yeah.
I'm happy.
Sorry?
I'm happy to answer any questions by someone who is serious about finding the answers, the truth here.
Yes, yes, because I'm just a journalist. It's my job to be a conveyor of information, you know? And
right.
So, okay, maybe before we finish, we can continue a bit longer, if you want, because there's no show after the hour.
Well, my time is a little limited, but we can go on for another 10 or 15 minutes if you like.
Okay, all right. So, you're writing a new book now.
Yes, I'm writing a new book, and it will cover my entire 18 years or so of experience with this subject. I've met a lot of people, of course, I've listened to a lot of stories, and I'm just trying to assimilate it all and summarize it and try to put my knowledge out there for the public to understand what I understand about this. Not that I have all the answers. There's still a lot of questions, but still,
yeah.
I think I have a lot of experience with this subject.
When you get clues from the universe, like UFOs or lights or objects, then, because if you ask the question, is there life out there? And if you see objects in the sky, then you have even more questions. How does it work? How do they propel their system? How do they transport from other places in the universe? How do they get here?
Right.
Adjust space and the space-time continuum. Can they manipulate it? Because
the answer to that question seems to be yes. That they somehow do manipulate time and space. Seem to be able to be in two different places at the same time, or in different dimensions, different time dimensions. This is a very intriguing subject, of course, for us. That people have dealt with in science fiction. But from what I've read from abductees, from people who have been abducted, a lot of strange things happen. For example, these objects, these beings seem to be able to walk through walls and come through the ceiling of homes. And not only them, but they take their abductees through the same, they take them through walls or through windows and that sort of thing. Now,
I heard that, yeah. They can somehow convert matter into energy and energy back to matter.
Well, that's a possibility, or they could take you back in time when those structures were not there.
Right.
So there's all kinds of speculative ideas, but you've got to admit it, this is fascinating, what they can do. Because many of these extraterrestrials talk about coming not only from other star systems in our galaxy, but from other galaxies.
Yes, and also from other dimensions.
And other dimensions. So, and they also seem to be able to predict the future and know all about your past. So these are all interesting subjects, aren't they?
Yes, very fascinating indeed. Yeah, there are people, because maybe my last question will be about 2012. This is the year the Mayans predicted, because the Mayans and the Hopis and all other indigenous tribes are saying our star brothers and sisters will return. What's your take on that?
I would not discount it. These beings, these objects have been visiting Earth probably since our earliest beginnings. And I'm certain that they were probably here at the time of the Mayans and other ancient civilizations. Excuse me. And they would probably give some information about the future, you know, what would happen in the future. So I would not discount this. However, it's still in the area of speculation. And like you say, there are people that can seem to be able to communicate with them. However, other people think they can, and other people are just out frauds about how they communicate with extraterrestrials. So we've got that whole gamut of speculative possibilities.
Yes, because it's interesting how the indigenous people live. There are still some tribes left in the United States and in Central and South America, and they seem to be more in contact with nature, and that's how they are able to be in open space, like in the Grand Canyon or in the Andes Mountains, right, where more things are possible. And
yeah, that's one of the things the ETs are interested in, and that is that we take care of our planet and we work in concert, in synchronicity with our planet, and protect it. And the indigenous peoples, of course, before industrialization, they did just that. I think they understood the Earth better. They understood the life, and they respected life more than we seem to be respecting it, and so it makes sense that they would have had better contact with ETs.
And maybe that's the reason why I'm here, because they see that we are taking all the resources from this planet, and I think this planet is a living being. It's not just a solid rock. And because we are taking all the minerals and all the metals from the crust of the Earth, there should be other ways in higher advanced technologies that we can not have so much waste production and deal more in an efficient way with the resources.
Yes, and those things will happen when we are all working together, and it's not just a few powerful people that are raping the planet of coal and oil and other natural resources. So there again, the people have to take charge of this planet, and we can't have excessive secrecy. We can't have excessive commercialization or industrialization of our planet. We all have to work together, and so this is a big order, tall order, I know, but that's where we have to go. That's the direction we have to go.
Yes, if we act as one people, united on this planet, then we can welcome the extraterrestrial races and share the wonderful gifts of creation.
Exactly, I agree.
Okay, Robert, I want to thank you for this interview.
You're welcome.
And you were superb, and I want to thank you again. And I'll be back in 2 weeks on BBS Radio with ET First Contact Radio. And Robert, if you know somebody, a friend of you or a name that you know that I might interview, I'll be happy to hear it from you.
Okay, Martin, I'll send you a couple of names. You're okay. Welcome.
Okay, so everybody, thank you for listening. This was ET First Contact Radio with Martin Horst and Robert Salas. We are signing off now, and we wish you all a blessed evening wherever you're living, and could be also morning or night. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.